About 2 years ago, I was traveling the state of Montana, a big sky country, as we call it, and there are many people in this country can relate to what it means to live in an area that is very sparsely populated, has much more wildlife than it does people, has beautiful mountains and wonderful plains. And I was advocating on behalf of that state's effort to decriminalize cannabis. And I can tell you that in 2004, that state did pass a voter initiative that created the medical cannabis law for the state of Montana. And I met a man who talked to me about a woman who was the driving force behind that initiative in the state of Montana. Her name is Robin Prosser. Robin was a woman suffering from a very severe lupus-like immunosuppressive disorder. She was in constant pain. Her muscles ached. Her joints ached. She couldn't keep food down. She had no appetite. She had no social life. People couldn't touch her because her body ached. A story that I've heard from a number of people who have embraced medicinal cannabis. And she decided to get active. She couldn't do much, so almost everything she did by telephone and with postage stamps from her home. But she was part of a citizen movement to create new law in that state. That movement prevailed, and medicinal cannabis became the reality for the state of Montana. I was preparing to give a talk on my little island where I live, Orcas Island in the San Juans off the state of Washington. My friends and neighbors had said, you know, you've given this talk to people all over the world, but we've never heard you. So about 250 of them showed up at this beautiful little community theater we have. And I was very much looking forward to the talk. I had written some new ideas down and freshened up my presentation and was very much looking forward to talking to literally friends and neighbors. The morning of my afternoon talk, I got a call from this friend of Robin Prosser, who had some news to give me. He told me that she had been receiving a particularly strong strain of sativa cannabis, had been taking it, and that her life had been transformed. She was able to get out of the house, to have kind of a social life. She was able to reduce the pain associated with her condition. All in all, her life was made infinitely more livable than it had been before she discovered cannabis. She woke up one morning, went out to the post office, out to her RFD, the rural delivery system in rural parts of the country, expecting a UPS package. It wasn't there. She put a tracer on it, attempted to track it down. It was, in fact, her medicine. It turns out the DEA had intercepted, Drug Enforcement Administration, had intercepted her medicine. They seized it. They did not arrest her, but they didn't give it back to her. She wrote a letter, op-ed piece, really, to the Missoula Gazette, I think it was, and it got a lot of attention, which prompted the DEA special agent in charge of the Rocky Mountain Division to write his own op-ed piece or letter to the editor. It said something to the effect that we did seize her drugs. And we did so because we think it is our responsibility to save Montanans from their law. Now, if you're an Australian, a true blue Australian, or a true blue American, you've made that law yourselves. That's what the people of Montana did. And so they're going to save the people of Montana, who, by the way, are a very independent sort. And can become irritable cusses in the faces of that kind of behavior. So there was a lot of backlash to this. But that's what he said. And no, we're not giving it back, he said in a letter. Because it's not medicine and she shouldn't be taking it. This is her life, her experience. She's already made clear the transformative effect that it has had on her life. So she wrote another letter. And in this one she said, "We, through the initiative process in the state of Montana, have in fact made law that has made life better for a whole lot of people. Now we get the federal government telling us that that law is moot, and that they in fact will decide for us what is best for us in this state." She said, "Maybe it's time for a new initiative, this one for assisted suicide." So the call that I got that very morning that I was giving this talk was to the effect that Robin Prosser had in fact taken her own life. I was so upset about this that I'm getting upset right now. It was almost impossible for me to give that talk. And then I sort of mustered up my courage and asked myself, what would Robin want? And was able not only to get through the talk, but to win a few friends and influence a few thoughts about the horror that is the U.S.-led global war on drugs. The drug war has caused infinitely more harm than good. We have spent, since Richard Nixon proclaimed drugs public enemy number one and declared all-out war on them, $1 trillion prosecuting it in the states alone. We have incarcerated tens of millions of people for predominantly nonviolent drug offenses. We have fragmented families. We have damaged lives. And what do we have to show for it? Drugs in my country and in yours are more readily available at lower prices and higher levels of potency than when Nixon declared war on them. And make no mistake, he wasn't declaring war on drugs. He was declaring war on people. Young people, poor people, black people. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to find evidence of what I'm talking about. Listen to the interview that John Ehrlichman, one of Nixon's key aides, gave to a reporter a couple of years after he left in disgrace, the result of the Watergate scandal. Listen or read the diary entries of Bob Haldeman, another key aide, who joined Nixon in saying, "We can't really declare war on young black men in this country. That's not politically feasible. But what we can do is declare war on what he called their recreation." That coming, incidentally, from a man who used to drink himself silly in the White House with what he called silver bullets, very potent gin martinis, every night, chasing in the process Dilantin, an anti-epileptic, which produces the most bizarre set of side effects that you ever want to see. Side effects that you do not want to see manifesting in the President of the United States of America, and putative leader of the free world, with his hand hovering over the button. You know, this is not encouraging. And the nerve of that man to declare war on drugs, meaning war on people, at a time when he was a major, by definition, drug offender. These were prescribed pills, for example, that he was taking for which he had no prescription. I think Richard Nixon should have been on his knees with Henry Kissinger asking for forgiveness, not for Watergate, but for declaring war on his own people. The damage done has been literally untold and almost untellable. So many people have been harmed. People have lost their student loans, get caught with a single joint. You lose your student loan if it's financed by the federal government, and many, if not most, are. If you happen to live in public housing, you're going to be evicted for the same offense. You're going to lose the opportunity to travel. I have a dear friend whose daughter was arrested on a heroin offense many, many years ago, who cannot travel to Canada. She and her husband, their young daughter, we're so looking forward to a trip to Vancouver. She's been drug-free, clean and sober now for, I don't know, a decade, 12 years. She gets to the border in Blaine between Washington State and Canada and is turned back by the Canadian authorities. So around the world, we have caused much damage in waging war against people in the name of zero tolerance of drugs. Now, I know that drugs have caused much, much harm. I know that I'm in the presence of many people who have been deeply and personally affected. Your lives wrenched by the experience of having lost a loved one. Friends of loved ones. There's nobody who's not touched by the drug issue, the drug quandary. But the drug war itself has caused far more harm than good, as I've said, and will probably repeat. And I think it's time for us to recognize that the organizing mechanism behind the drug war is prohibition. It's behind every drug law. It is behind the war on drugs. And it is a fatally flawed model. It cannot work. It never has worked, and it never will work. In my country, from 1920 to 1933, most of you know this, who watch television or go to movies in Australia, and have seen a slice of life from the Roaring Twenties, the bootlegger era. We romanticize that chapter of our personal history. The fact is, it unleashed incredible violence on the streets of cities throughout the United States, rural communities as well. But certainly in cities like Chicago, which is sort of our iconic gangland, with Al Capone being our iconic gangster, these bootleggers were nothing more than drug dealers. They had tapped into an illicit market. They understood that when you make something unlawful for which there is a demand, the supply is going to be monopolized by criminals. It is going to be the entire commerce, for example, of illicit drugs, of which alcohol was one during those 13 years, is going to artificially inflate costs. It's not artificial at all, frankly. Prohibition, law of supply and demand are quite natural laws. They really are. So what's happened, of course, is during that era, we see drive-by shootings, Thompson's submachine guns sticking out the back of shiny black Ford automobiles that in the movies are seen turning a corner on two wheels with tires squealing and those submachine guns firing rat-a-tat shots into Italian restaurants. And in New York, too, I might add. Innocent people being caught in the crossfire. Police officers either shot and killed or corrupted. People dying of overdose. Bad bathtub gin was the overdose of the day. People wanted the same product that they were able to get before that particular drug war erupted, and they would look for a way to manufacture it. And they were killing, paralyzing, if not killing themselves in the process. So everything that happened during our alcohol prohibition has happened now during the drug war, multiplied exponentially. The violence along the Mexico-U.S. border today bears note. Some of you are aware of this. Some of you may not have heard about it at all. It's really important to understand that the violence, which I'll describe in a moment, is a direct function, a direct product of prohibition and the drug war. What I am about to describe would not happen were it not for prohibition and the drug war. That industry, by the way, the illicit drug trafficking industry, is a $300 to $500 billion industry. Fully freighted costs associated with it, profits associated with it. Really, $500 billion a year. That's going to buy you a whole lot of violence and a whole lot of corruption. Not too long ago, Mexican drug gangs, the cartels, the kingpins of those cartels, would dispatch rival drug dealers with a single 9mm shot to the back of the head. They get them down on their knees and do a gangland shooting. Today, they are throwing those people onto burning tires and flippantly referring to the practice as a carne asada barbecue, literally incinerating living people. More commonly, they are severing the heads of rival drug traffickers or snitches. What's the Australian name for an informant? Thank you. Thank you. I'm learning that term. Michael's teaching me. Dobber. The occasional honest police chief, the occasional honest mayor, the occasional honest lawmaker would also be put at grave risk if they didn't cooperate with the cartels. So what they're doing is decapitating these people. They're piling up their corpses in very public places like a plaza in Tijuana or Juarez or Morelia. And they are attaching a little note to the torso of the deceased, which informs loved ones or lawmakers where they might reunite head and body. The heads, by the way, would be rolled into civic gatherings, much like this. Imagine, if you will, those double doors opening and the head of someone you know being rolled into a civic gathering or a restaurant. They are sending home the message that you had better cooperate with them. If you are a dauber, you're dead, period. But if you're just an honest lawmaker, police chief, mayor, or other public official, you'll be given a choice. Plata o ploma. Silver or lead. If you agree to cooperate with us, we will give you money and lots of it. We will set you up for life. And do we have the funds to do it? If you don't cooperate with us, we'll kill you. But not before kidnapping your spouse, your children, anyone who is a loved one. So what they're basically saying is, you can be dead or you can be corrupt. So when people ask me, a San Diego native who spent or misspent a significant portion of his young life south of the border, why are the Mexican people so corrupt? Corruption has been a part of the political tradition of Mexico for a long time. It's never occurred in Chicago or New York or anything. But it's been a part of the fabric of Mexican political life. Today, it looks nothing like it did as recently as 3 or 4, certainly 8 or 10 years ago. It has become systemic. It has become beyond the pale. Mexico is a narco state right now. Political observers, some, are predicting that it will become a failed state. Today, 230 American cities play host to Mexican drug cartel presence, which is to say they have set themselves up in business in American cities. Atlanta and Seattle, bless you, were recently, along with one other major city, who's Pittsburgh, I think, were raided by the DEA, by agents of the Justice Department, because of this Mexican drug cartel connection. Atlanta, think about it, a landlocked city, not on the border, not a port city, has become a hotbed of Mexican drug activity. And here's what will happen, by the way. You get a table like this. Everybody see that? Except it'll have to be longer to accommodate all the drugs seized, all the currency, either Australian or U.S., and all the guns arrayed at the far end of the table. I know this because I sat behind these tables and stood behind these tables in an earlier incarnation as a police chief. And statements will be made, statements to the effect, we have dealt the Sinaloa cartel, the Gulf cartel, the Arellanos Brothers cartel, La Familia, the cartel that was just implicated over the weekend in the States. A fatal blow. We have knocked their legs out from under them, yada, yada, yada. No, they haven't. It created a job opportunity. It's important to recognize the power of that kind of money and the extent of the corruption. One guy goes down, head of a particular cartel, 40 people waiting to take the job. And no one is safe. No one is safe. The mayor of Juarez lives in El Paso, Texas, U.S. of A. Other mayors, other commissioners live in the United States who are responsible for administering a government in Mexico. It doesn't take much imagination to foresee the possibilities if this continues. I don't think Mexican drug cartels will be arriving on the shores of Australia in the immediate future. But I would not for a moment hesitate to predict that unless and until we develop the boldness, the imagination, we develop the capacity to rely on research-driven, evidence-based conclusions about the harms being done by the drug war and end it, that kind of behavior will not spread, because it will. Such, once again, is the power of that kind of money and its corrupting influence. I could, but won't, go on forever on this subject. I'm very passionate about it. That probably is obvious. I care deeply about it. But I can't end, really, without talking about my education in Australia. In Sydney, and then again in Melbourne, I talked... Where's Marianne McConnell? Thank you. I thanked Marianne for a gift, and she probably didn't know what she'd given me. I have said such things as, a heroin addict needs heroin as much as a diabetic needs insulin. Well, what am I really saying? First of all, it's an indisputable truth about the physiology, the chemistry, the on and on and on about heroin as a substance. But I'd also done, in one fell swoop, a whole lot of labeling. A heroin addict? I heard that in Melbourne when a beautiful young woman said, "Look at me. I function. I'm highly functioning. Now, sometimes I'm not so functional, just like you. But I get along quite well in this world. I am a drug user. I am not an addict." And thanks to Helen, I don't think I'll be saying diabetics anymore. I will be saying people with diabetes. I will be saying to Jill, a beautiful young woman who has shared with me a personal story about how she has been labeled as a human being who happens to have the condition of cystic fibrosis, right? No. Cerebral palsy. Yeah. Good for me. I'm sorry, I don't even remember the condition you have. All I know is you're Jill and a wonderful person who once again gave me a really important gift. I think it's just real important that we recognize, as we talk about the drug war, as I talk about prohibition, that I recognize its full effects on human beings, on individuals, on their families. I've spoken of Robin Prosser. I could just as easily tonight share with you another story about a woman named Stephanie Whitey, who in the state of Minnesota was suffering severe, indeed terminal cancer, a facial melanoma, in which her face actually was being removed about 2 inches at a time, and who was in such severe pain that her children couldn't hug her. A horrible, horrible story about the police in that state. But it's important to recognize that in looking at the drug war and all of its harmful consequences, I'm saying this as much to myself as to you, that we recognize we are talking about human beings and that we find a way to check those labels at the door. And when we do that, police officers, some with a very, very different attitude about the drug war and about prohibition than I happen to have, can be effective. They can be touched by that, by these human stories that represent the suffering, not only of a drug abuse, but the drug war itself. Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening to me. I hope I said something that provoked some additional thought and questions and so forth, then I'm happy to take those now, and I'll come out from behind this lectern for that.